we are seeing now, and if we're paying attention, I've noticed some people don't. I don't mean in the church, but some people aren't paying any attention to the things that are happening in the government. And if we see the discussions of what a government is supposed to do and how it's supposed to work and how it's done, I would imagine, considering that we're supposed to think on these things, the good things, the beautiful things, to look at the positive side of what's happening in the United States now, we could say we have people that are trying. And they're doing what they know to do. Or they're trying to fit inside their understanding of what a government is for. But we can see it's not working. It's really not. The public is losing its trust. It's losing its ability to even support the government now here in the United States. That's happened before in the United States. We had a war over it in the United States where they just didn't want to go along with the Congress, the Senate, the President. So it's happened before. Imagine a super society that's able to solve problems that mankind has never solved. And they do it with creativity and with experience, and it makes them, the members of that society, better, stronger, more able. It's possible to harness the power of multiple brains, multiple minds. It's possible to do that in multiple lives who are working together on a common goal. These minds who set aside their differences and come out to put their heads together and actually go for a goal. I'll give you an example. At MIT, there was a contest, and the prize was $40,000. And what they do every few years is take a bunch of balloons, fill them with helium, and let them go. And they put a little tag number hanging from the bottom. And for the first person or team of persons who find all of them, there are 9 of them, they win $40,000. And it's taken as little as 8 days. Because they go everywhere. They go to Canada, they go to the ocean, they go, you know, everywhere. They go where they want to go. This year was different. A team at MIT just decided, look, why don't we do this? Why don't we tell people on the internet that if you recruit someone who finds a balloon, not if you find the balloon, but if you recruit someone who finds a balloon, you get part of the $40,000. But you had to have a picture of the balloon to prove that you found it with the number on it. Want to guess how long it took to find 9 balloons? 9 hours. 9. The shortest period of time before that was 8 days. A group of people working together over a vast difference of ideas and concepts in their minds toward one goal were able to accomplish what no one had ever even come close to doing before. And there is actually a new field of mental research that shows that's what's going to happen, that minds are going to work together more and more and more because of the internet. The reality of it is, think about what was the real motivation for finding those balloons. A reward. Part of $40,000. I'll get part of $40,000 if I find a balloon. Well, I'll go look then. So that's, in some ways, a selfish way of participating. So there's another way of looking at this, and that is that our individuality in God's family will still be there because we'll contribute to the whole family, and everyone will gain from what we know and our experience and our talents and our gifts from God, and also they will share them with us. If you haven't thought of it before, it is an accusation against the idea that there are a great many people who will be in the family of God because they'll all just be like bees in a hive. They'll all just have the hive mentality and they'll all just kind of wander around in a daze doing the kind of work that ants or bees do. No, it is a contribution to the whole that makes the whole better than the sum of the parts. So now, we have to settle something before we go into this. Understand, if we're going to talk about this, the name of, if the title of this is Of One Spirit. Of One Spirit. For those of us who have been around the church for a long time, I'm going to ask two questions. Some of us are going to answer them wrong. Can governments of this world create a perfect society? The general answer in this room would be, well, how's it working so far? No. The governments of this world cannot create a perfect society. Second question. Can the government of God in the kingdom create a perfect society? Well, certainly. No. That's what we need to settle. The government of God is the government. It's the authority. It's the organizing, communicating structure of God's family. Well, how do you create a perfect society then? We do. Otherwise, why change? Why learn to not sin? Why learn God's way? Why be there at all? If we're all going to do just what God makes us do, why be there? This is something that we need to understand because it has to do with your value and your vision and your ability to get through the trials that God will allow us to be involved in. Let's turn first to Philippians, first chapter of Philippians in verse 27. Philippians, the first chapter, Philippians 1, verse 27. This is to be of one spirit. One spirit. But God works with this one spirit, as he puts it, in a unique way that the world hasn't a clue about. I know you're probably still trying to wrap your mind around the fact that God's government won't create a perfect society. Well, God's government's also his family, so it will help. It will make it possible for a perfect society to be created, but it's the cooperation, it's the oneness of spirit that creates the perfect society. Not the government. Why am I saying that? Because if we're going to lean back and expect God to fix it, we won't be there. Did Israel have to walk over the dry land or just stand there and float by God's power across over to the other side? Did they have to walk through the desert for 40 years, endure that? Or were they just kind of put into suspended animation and woke up 40 years later? There are actions required by God's people. So, Philippians 1 verse 27, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ. The gospel of Christ, the good news, the good message of the Messiah. So that whether I come and see you or am absent, this is Paul speaking, of course, I may hear of your works or your affairs, that you stand fast, that you won't move, that you don't give up. You'll stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Faith of the gospel, interesting phrase, isn't it? Looking forward to something. Faith says, you know, it's the evidence of things unseen. You're looking forward. It'll go all the way through Hebrews 11. You'll find that's what faith is about. It's about looking forward to something that causes action, causes life to happen. The faith of the gospel is the family of God. We just talked about that. So, if we're going to be of one spirit, how does God do that? So, well, no, you know, we have to agree with each other and, you know, all come to a commonality of minds. If we're all going to be like that, we're just kind of robots then. Can we discuss? Is there anything in the Bible that talks about people discussing with God, having discussions with God? Is there? Well, God, if there be 50 people, righteous people in the city, can we save them? Well, how about 40? How about 30? How about 20? How about 10?
Father, if this cup pass from me, will it please pass from me? Nevertheless, your will be done. Does God discuss? Discuss. Not argue. Of course. That's why we're all going to be able to express our individuality, but be of one mind. What's that mean? Same goal. We're going to the same place. Let's turn over to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4. This is too big to understand. Actually, no, this simplifies it. Believe me, this actually makes everything easy. It makes it easy. We're going to the same place. We have to do it by the direction and the communication and the government of God, who gives us the protection and the environment to do it. But the government doesn't create the perfect society. He makes the environment for the society to create itself. Ephesians 4, verse 7. Ephesians 4, verse 7, and now here we're starting to see something. Well, let's go back to verse 4. There is one body. Verse 4. There is one body. There's one spirit. Just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all. So there's a government, a structure, authority if necessary, and through all and in you all. So he's here, he's in you, he's through you. What's he doing? But to each, here we go, verse 7, but to each one of us, grace was given according to the measure of Christ's gifts. Well, now we know what that verse really means. It means, what we've been told is, it means that the ministry, the administration of the church is given the gifts of the Spirit. But it doesn't say that. It says the government doesn't make the society. It says we do. That's what this says. But to each one of us, grace was given. In other words, God revealed himself. We didn't earn that. He's revealing himself and his plan to us, and we don't earn it. That's what grace is. According to the measure of Christ's gifts. So in other words, we'll see what that means. The measure of Christ's gift, according to that. We'll start to understand that a little bit better. But each person, not merely the administration, not merely the administration of the ministry. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, stop. Sorry, but stop. We can't do that anymore. We have to stop it. But I can't be a king. I can't do this. Stop it. Just stop. 1 Corinthians, verse 12. 1 Corinthians 12. No, I can't. No, you can't. Don't. Not. I have nothing to do with. No. Not to each of us. No, that means something else. 1 Corinthians. Well, I can't have the gifts of the Spirit. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 28. 1 Corinthians 12. In verse 28. 1 Corinthians 12, 28. And now we blow the whole idea right out of the water. And God has appointed these in the church, first apostles, the first, and second prophets. So apostles are above prophets, and third teachers. So you have first apostles, see, they're in charge, and they tell the prophets what to do. What? And then the prophets tell the teachers what to do. And after that, miracles. Huh? And then gifts of healing. What? How are those ranks? Wait a minute. And helps and administrations. Well, oh, administrations, there we go. See, varieties of languages. Look, Will Berg told us about, Will Berg received a 50-year certificate for being in the ministry, 50 years at the General Conference. And he was telling us about this very thing. He said, back in the 50s, Mr. Armstrong was approached by some of the, quote, evangelists. By the way, we have to translate this verse correctly here in a moment. We'll find out what that verse really says. Point is, they went to him with this verse and they said, see, Mr. Armstrong, look, this shows that there are ranks in the ministry. There's ranks in administration. You know, you have a government inside the church, and there are ranks there. And then, Mr. Armstrong, you're the apostle, so, and there aren't any other ones, so there's an apostle. You're in charge. But then there's evangelists under that. And then after that, there's teachers or prophets. We don't have any prophets right now, so let's just go straight to teachers. Let's divide those up. We have pastor rank, and then we have preaching elder, on and on, right? By the way, that isn't going on in United. So if you never heard about any of this, fine, good. You don't have to learn it or unlearn it. What's this sentence really saying? In Greek, these words are adverbs. First, second, third, they're adverbs. They modify the verbs. Look, these words should be translated firstly, secondly, thirdly, not positions, not, hey, first is apostle, right? There is no reference to rank, obviously, but instead a list or order like a shopping list. This is actually a list of what? Gifts. Is miracles a rank? Healings, is that a rank? I am a miracle. No, I'm an apostle, but I'm a miracle. Yeah, all right, that doesn't work, does it? See, the verse itself falls apart, if that's what that verse is supposed to mean. So now, wait a minute. Now, since there aren't ranks here, does that mean there aren't ranks, period? There is administration. It says that's one of the gifts. There's administration. So there is communication that's necessary to move people toward a goal. There are shepherds that keep us together as a flock going to a goal. I don't know if you ever thought about the word communication. It starts out with commune. Being common. We're common. We communicate how we're in common. And that's what administration does. And that's what leadership is about. It's a gift. Not better. By the way, notice it's way down the list. But it's not really a list in order of importance anyway. Is there a system of governance in the church? Is there an actual system? Sure there is. God says to do things decently and in order. You want to see it? It actually is in the Bible. Where is the actual structure of governance? Well, it's a surprise. It's in 1 Corinthians 11. We're already there, basically. Just kind of maybe turn back a page. It's in 1 Corinthians 11. And it's kind of a surprise because it's been there a while. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. This is the primary structure of government, if you will, or administration of the church. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ. The head of woman is man. The head of Christ is God. Did you get that memo? I thought that God was the Father, Jesus Christ was under him, and then there's the apostle. You who've been here a while know what I'm talking about. And under the apostle, there's the evangelist, and there's the preaching elders. It's not saying that at all. Not even close. Is it? Is it? There's the Father, there's the Son, and there's man. Then there's woman, which is another subject entirely. We'll get to that. Point is, there's your structure. And by the way, Paul does talk about a secondary structure. He describes elders and deacons and their jobs, their responsibilities, their calling. He describes it elsewhere. And the emphasis is, when it talks about the structure of the church, functioning in the church, it's how to administer when authority is necessary, or administer when leadership is necessary, or communication is necessary. And it doesn't do away with authority. There is authority when it's necessary. And it clarify how God intends for authority to be used in a loving manner for the good of all. Now, what does the word apostle mean? We have all been told that apostle means one sent. Well, it means that. But it was used originally, the very first use of it, the word apostle, which is basically used here in 1 Corinthians, it was used as someone who had witnessed Jesus Christ's resurrection. Is that a rank? No. So, you know, a personal witness to the resurrection of Christ. Well, obviously, later on, there was Paul. He was an apostle. I truly believe Mr. Armstrong was an apostle in the sense that he was one sent to tell the truth to the world that had never heard it in 19 centuries. And God used him to bring people to the place where they understood what they couldn't as a human being, possibly even dream of understanding. But he would be very angry if we were to say, he did it. He didn't. God did it. Through the gift he was given or gifts he was given. That's the point of it. It was something Mr. Armstrong was given for all. And here we sit. Those who are willing to continue. And he was given a gift as we are. To each one. Well, Mr. Armstrong's gifts were greater than mine. I mean, obviously, there's no question. Who says? You? Stop and think a minute. What does God tell us? To each one. To each one. It's been a misunderstanding. It was presented to Mr. Armstrong in the 50s by people who wanted to be in charge of other people. So if we think the government of God is going to educate us, bring us to salvation, teach us how to be converted, or create a perfect society, we're sitting in the wrong chairs. It is never going to happen. God's government makes the environment possible. Removal of Satan, for instance, from society, from the world. A training of leaders in the beginning. Get it? The society builds itself, builds on itself. We are of one mind, of one faith, of one spirit. Oh. Does the Bible make more sense now? Is there some reason to change? Is there some reason to become like God now? Yeah. Now, you're not hanging your salvation or the ability of the kingdom to function on somebody else. Let's turn Romans 12. Let's go over to Romans 12 a moment. Romans 12 tells us that we are to present ourselves as a living sacrifice. We know that. We know what it means. Well, Paul said, you know, present yourselves a living sacrifice, which is your reasonable service. In other words, nothing special about that. You know, you don't get the combat infantry badge for presenting yourself a living sacrifice or the Medal of Honor. It's just reasonable. It's what you're supposed to do. In other words, giving your life is your job. Wish somebody had showed us how to do that. Boy, that would be a lot. Somebody did. Romans 12, verse 3. Romans 12, 3. For I say, through the grace given to me. Notice how he's not saying he says it really. So you're hearing it from my face. It's coming out of this face of mine, but it's really been given to me by not earned, but given. To everyone who is among you. To everyone who is among you. Not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. But to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function. So, we being many are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. We are forming the society of God's family. And none of us is the family. None of us is the body. We are part of it, he says. Then verse 6, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Or ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches in teaching. He who exhorts in exhortation. And he who gives with liberality. And he who leads with diligence. And he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. And of course, we all know what he's obviously speaking about there, as well as we've been taught is that, see, God talks about the ministry right away. So, see, it's one of the gifts. You know what it means, the word ministry? Service. 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 It does not mean some rank where somebody tells us spiritually what we can't possibly understand unless they tell us. What it means is service. Giving yourself a living sacrifice. So that's talking to you. You. That's not just talking to, quote, ordained people. Now, we used to use gifts based on rank. That's not what God's actually doing at all. Christ told us not to rule over each other, as the Gentiles do. He told us to cooperate, to work together, to be of one mind, one heart, one spirit, one body. Even now, we really have to put a lot on the table and discuss more collaboration and working together and learning from each other. But I can tell you the culture of the United Church of God today compared to, you know, if you were to literally move in time going back to, say, 1985, you would see a church that's dramatically different in its understanding of this than we understand it today. It's a spiritual gift to understand this too. And I want to ask you something, because we've talked about this before. Do you think a spiritual gift is an augmentation of a natural talent? You know, you're built with the ability to, you're a musician. And, you know, you're good at, you're a musician. So a spiritual gift then would augment your musical talent. Is that a spiritual gift? Sometimes. But let's look at something we've read 100 times and notice an odd thing about a spiritual gift that we all read. And it's not an augmentation of a natural talent. It's in Acts 2. What? Pentecost? Yep. Acts 2. But we read that. I know, yeah. Read it before. Acts 2, verse 5. And we read this and we know exactly what this means. And the world doesn't. Acts 2, verse 5. Speaking about the tongues thing. Okay? Well, let's look at it a second, though. What's it saying here? Acts 2, verse 5. Now there were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. There wasn't a single nation there was a Jew in that wasn't there, represented by somebody. And when this sound, the rushing wind, occurred, the multitude came together, what? And were confused because, why? Everyone heard them speak in his own language. Well, we've read that. It's amazing. They heard their own language. So how many apostles were there? Hundreds? Thousands? There were 11. Well, how many languages were being spoken? Hundreds. Well, what are they, each apostle speaking 50 languages apiece? This was not an enhancement of a natural talent. This was a gift of hearing. When you go to services, ask God for the gift of hearing. It's a gift. How many times have we read that and not noticed it? I have. 43 years, man. I never noticed it before. So what God does is he makes what's necessary available. You just, here, we need to do this, let's do this. But none of us can go home, clench our fists, squeeze our face together really hard, and make God give us a gift. There's a commercial for some credit card where a bunch of Vikings get together, and they're all going to have a beard-growing contest. And they sit down across from each other and go, and their beards start to grow. You win. We can't do that with gifts. As a matter of fact, we don't even get to choose what the gifts are. And the manifestation of them, or whether anybody even knows about them, other than us and God. Don't get to do that. It's not our business. It's not up to us. It never was. So, let's talk about that a little. Ephesians 4, being of one spirit, gifts of the Spirit. Ephesians 4, let's go back there. Remember, we were always taught when the church sees it's wrong on something, it will change. This doesn't sound like much of a change, but when you know, you begin to realize, well, you mean I might have gifts that are, quote, comparable to someone else? Yeah. But that shouldn't it be in administration? Who says? We just read it's not. Oh. Well, then it'll be chaos. We'll have absolute... Look. There's organization, there's administration, there's communication. Obviously, God has set that up. But it's not the development of character. It's the setting of the environment for the development of character, for the development of God's family, the protection of it, and keeping it safe from Satan. That's the administration. It is not to develop Christians. You say, well, they're helpers of our joy. Okay. But we have the relationship with God individually and collectively. It's supposed to be together. Anyway, Ephesians 4. Know where we're going? Yeah, Ephesians 4. So let's, now that I said that, let's take a look at it. Ephesians 4, this is about the church here. Verse 11. Ephesians 4, 11. And he himself, meaning God, without question, gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Well, you know, there's that list again, so, you know, really this probably is ranks. For the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come, what, verse 13, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature or perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. But not if you're not an evangelist, you're not the same measure of the fullness of Christ. Getting that silly? Doesn't it start to fall apart? If one person can't be of the measure of the fullness of the stature of Christ because someone else has got a higher rank, this falls apart. Because God's saying everybody can come to this place, and are supposed to. So what is the ministry for? What are these gifts for that we're seeing here in Ephesians 4? They are for, what does it say they're for? For the equipping of the saints. For the work of service. So we're all going to be ordained? It says here for the work of service. For the equipping of the saints to learn how to be selfless. To learn how to be loving. To learn how to give their lives away. Romans 12:1. Give yourself a living sacrifice. Does this make sense? Doesn't this make more sense than God's going to set up a group of guys to tell us what to do so that we can get into the kingdom? They make an environment where we can learn how to be like God. They encourage us to do that. They show us what God's doing. They're inspired and given gifts to do that. And we don't want to turn on or, you know, try to overthrow the administration that God's put. That's not the point. The point is, none of us are able to receive less of God's Spirit or less of the fullness of Christ than any one of us are. Wow. Okay, so now we know there's a big change coming. What's really going to happen is people are going to start, you know, speaking in French and playing mandolins and bringing fire down from the vents. Is there any balance to any of this? Is there anything we need to... Okay, now that we got through the fact that, you know, we're not... There isn't some big wall up that says, well, you know, you can't have gifts of the Spirit. You can't... You don't get those. You only might get some little one, you know, like maybe be able to teach in Sabbath school or something. But you can't have the real stuff. No, it's fullness of the stature of Christ. There it is. So now, I guess we're going to have to just go into some big competition as to who has more gifts, right? Well, that could happen. And did. In Paul's day. Let's talk about it.
1 Corinthians 12. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians 12. We got to work through this because there's a balance here. Remember, if we're not in the group, if we're not with the family, if we're not in the oneness of it, we have a tendency to feel left out or actually want to bring other people along with us. You know, I'm not real sure about those guys in Cincinnati. How about you? Yeah, well, I kind of wondered, well, you know what, why don't we form our own little group? See, that doesn't work. I'll tell you why it doesn't work. God sets up his structure, and he sets it up through human beings. And if we see a human being doing something probably wouldn't be his best to have done that way, leave it alone. God's running the church. Whose church is this? Whose church is this? Vic Kubik's church. No. It's God's church. And there are going to be mistakes made by the human beings. Mr. Wonderland pointed out what one thing could somebody do or some group of people do to you to make you give up? What's that got to do with being here? What's that got? Well, they don't know how to manage the money. What's that got to do with the kingdom? Years ago, there's a group of people, I can say it now because he's long gone, it's Mr. Roansby's father. Group of people talking. Well, there's people in Pasadena, they know what they're doing. Should do it better. Mr. Roansby said, that's right. We all know how to do it. Why should we be involved? They're in training. Think about that. Each of us is in training for what we don't know how to do. Yeah, but those guys, you know, in Cincinnati, they're not doing it right. They're in training. Is it okay with you? If somebody gets trained beside you? Yeah, but they're messing it up. I don't know of anything they're messing up right now, by the way. Ask me later. No, I don't know anything. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. 1 Corinthians 12, 7. But the manifestation of the Spirit, or in other words, you actually see the working of it, is given to each one for the profit of all. So the point is, there's no way that we're given the manifestation, or given the Spirit of understanding, of conversion, or of understanding, or and of love, or any of those things, or of knowledge or wisdom, for ourselves. It's for all. For the profit, interesting, for the profit of all. Moving the family into a larger place, into orders of magnitude greater and more capable and more creative than it ever could have been with individuals. It's interesting how God looks at that. He wants a family that will move the family of God beyond where he is. What a thought. Okay, let's go down to verse 12. Oh, verse 11 first. Verse 11. But one and the same Spirit works in all these things. Verse 11. One and the same Spirit works in all these things, distributing to each one individually as he wills. And then verse 12. For as the body is one, and has many members, but all the members of that body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. This isn't that hard to understand. I mean, it's like looking at a baseball team. The team is one team, but it's made up of members, right? A church is made up of many members, but it's still one church. Okay, not that hard to understand. I had to go through a long explanation of this to somebody who wrote in the personal correspondence because he said, you can't have more than the Trinity. You can't. It's not possible. And she started quoting me scriptures. I said, well, you don't understand the name God. You don't understand what that means. So let's talk about it. He got it then. Nobody had explained it to him before. Verse 13. By one Spirit we were all baptized, verse 13, into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. And verse 14. For in fact the body is not one member, but many. Now, why in the world would he have to tell us that? What a silly thing to have. You know, the body's made up of muscles and bones and nerves and stuff. Well, you know, you got some muscle there, and it's the whole body. I'm not stupid enough to think that. Well, yeah, we are.
I know what the church doesn't. I wish I had a nickel for every time someone's... I know what... Church doesn't know everything they think they do. Okay. That implies, though, you know more than the church. Yes, I do. All right. No. The overall body knows more than any of us individually does. Now, what's important about that is sometimes the church makes mistakes on stuff in general. But we can't go against that, because what that does is it causes the structure of the family to fall apart. You mean to tell me we're supposed to cooperate with something that's not being done in accordance with the way God tells us to do it when I know better? Well, a perfect example is when Mr. Armstrong used to teach that we kept Pentecost on Monday because of the way he counted it in Leviticus 23. There were people who knew it was on Sunday. No question in Leviticus 23, it's a Sunday. They kept them both and never told anybody. They did what they needed to do before God, and they kept their mouth shut. What an interesting idea. Don't try to develop a following. Just do what God wants you to do. And what the church needs done, do it too. And God is in charge. He'll solve it. Guess what he did? Verse 11. Oh, we already did that, right? Okay. Did that. Verse 18. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 18. But now, meaning, you know, hey, look, we're going forward from here. But now, God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body, and the eye can't say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather, these members of the body, which seem to be weaker, are necessary. So I understand all this. Really? Well, I'll tell you what. So imagine... There was a regional pastor out of Chicago who came out here to speak, came out here to visit one day, and down at the Holiday Inn in Rockford. We're talking, I don't know, 43 years ago, 42 years ago. And he had this really nice Mercury that was one of the fleet cars. And, you know, I'd already gotten a used Ford Galaxy from Don Waterhouse. You know, I don't have one anymore. I'm going to turn it in. Can I get it? Yeah, sure. You want to buy it? They'll sell it to you. So he got out of his beautiful Mercury, and he's walking across the parking lot, and I said, you know what, when you get ready to, I'm not going to say his name, when you get ready to turn that in, please let me know, I'd be happy to buy that. He never spoke to me again, because how dare I rise to the level of buying something from him? He's important, and you're not. Say, that couldn't possibly... It happened. And a lot worse. Was I dumb, huh? Thought he was another human being on the planet with us. What a stupid guy. Of course, it's probably just as well he didn't speak to me anymore either. Anyway, let's go down. Where was we? Where was we at? Huh? Okay. Head to the feet, no matter what the members. Okay, then, verse 23. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, like me, on these we bestow greater honor, and our unpresentable parts have greater modesty. But our presentable parts have no need. See, in other words, you don't have to, you know, give special honor to the ones everybody sees. You see them. You mean God's giving honor to the ones you don't see, the service and the gifts that God... Nobody sees? You betcha. That's what he's saying. God sees it. Having given greater honor to that part which lacks it, that there should be no schism. That's about us now and our understanding now. So everybody has honor from God. Christ died for every one of them. We can't have schism in the body. We can't criticize each other. We can't say, you don't have my gift. You don't look at the Bible or God's way like I do, so you must not be converted. If you've never heard that, wait, you will. There can be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. All of them. And if one member suffers, all members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Wow. Now you are the body of Christ and members individually. So he's actually saying, look guys, you're going to have to knock it off. You can't just start judging each other and deciding who's in charge and who's not and who's better and who's more spiritual. You've got to stop it. Now let's look at something, because you're going, well, what's mine? I'm not president of the United Church of God, you know? Okay. No, you're not. 1 Corinthians 12 again. And we're going to go over something we kind of went over already, but let's see it again. Verse 7. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. Okay? Because there's a phrase in here. I always wondered, what is that? What? Right. Verse 7. But the manifestation, the appearance, if you will, you can actually sense it or see it or hear it. The manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one for the profit of all. Now, we're not talking about somebody standing up on their chair and speaking in gibberish. We're talking about actual being aware that God is here. Not the way that false churches do it. For to one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit. So someone actually may have wisdom. Now, one of the things that's worthwhile knowing is that when someone has wisdom, almost always it's quiet. You have to kind of seek out the person who has the wisdom, because they don't, I see you got a problem. I'm pretty wise. You want to know what to do? It doesn't happen. So some people actually have wisdom. They don't tell you about it. It's there. And it's from God, by the way, like it was with Solomon. Through the Spirit. To another, the word of knowledge. Through the same Spirit. So some people understand all this and can explain it. To another, faith. In other words, they look forward and are motivated by that, by the same Spirit. To another, the gifts of healings, by the same Spirit. Stop. Gifts, plural. Healings, plural. Ever wonder about that? I mean, when you're healed, right? The gift of healings. Why is it gifts, plural? Healings, plural. Well, let's talk about that. How precious is it, for example, when someone is in hospice, or in the hospital, home, and they're in their final days, final hours, and someone comes in and sits with them, takes their hand, and just is there. Now, not having gone through the process of dying, it's difficult for me to understand how that feels or how that is encouraging, but it is. Just to know you're not alone. There's somebody who gets it, somebody who knows positively where you're going and what's going to happen next, and they're just there. It's healing. They're not worried, not afraid, they're not stressed, and they're dying. It's a healing. It's a gift of healing. Oh, you mean they're not healed, but they're healed. See, there's spiritual healing. There's mental healing. There's certainly physical healing. Gifts of healings. Okay. See, they're telling us here, God's family, Father and Jesus Christ, are telling us here, when you've been concerned for someone, you are experiencing the gift God's giving you. And it's for all. It's for everyone when you exhibit that. And it doesn't mean that it's something that we should know about. Frankly, we shouldn't. And it's important for us to understand, too, that we don't see miracles as much as they did then. But we ought to ask ourselves, too, are there miracles and are they quieter? And I can tell you, yeah, they're quieter. We don't trumpet them. But then, you know, why would God work miracles at all and keep them quiet? They worked real well for Israel, didn't they? Miracles don't convert anybody at all. All miracles do is fix a problem.
Remember a minister who had a lot of experience. He was a senior minister. He's died now. We were doing one of those concerts we used to do. And we were outside and there were thousands of people listening to the concert. It started to rain. And we had rented a piano. And here's this piano is going to get wet. And, you know, there was an announcement, let's all go ahead and we'll start back up when the rain stops. If you want to come back, you're certainly welcome. And so everybody got off the stage and the piano is sitting there in the rain. And we're all watching everybody get out of there and trying to help all the small children and all the families. And I turned around and here was the senior pastor and a couple other guys picking that piano up and putting it up on the Park District stage under a cover. He was well known for having done things like that. One day he went to visit a man who had been in the church for a few weeks, and the man said, well, my car's broken down. Lived out in the desert in Arizona. You might know who I mean now. Anyway, the man said, well, my car's broken down. I don't have the money to fix it and can't get to services. And the deacon said, well, let's do something about that. We'll get some money. And he starts taking his jacket off to see what the problem was, and he turned around and senior minister who I'm talking about was gone. They're all in suits, you know. They looked, and here he was under the car working on it already. He understood this. His rank wasn't above service. It wasn't above anybody. As a matter of fact, he washed people's feet. If God can do it, can't we? So it's actually harder to have a responsible, visible position than it is to be quiet about it and have a gift of God given to you. We are one body, members giving of self to the whole body. Revelation 21. Is the government of God going to solve the problems of this world and make a perfect society? It's going to make it possible. But we will help do that. Or we won't. It's up to us as to whether we'll take the responsibility that's been given to us. Revelation 21 and verse 7. Revelation 21 verse 7 doesn't sound like it's related to what we've been talking about. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. Now, how does that relate to this? It's because we're speaking of family here. Everybody has everything together as sons of the Father. Everyone has everything. That can't work in the mindset of this world. It can only work in a world where we are of one mind, one spirit, one body. And in orders of magnitude, multiplying the talents and the gifts and the ability and the experience that each individual in the family has, where we're all working toward the same goals and discussing them. How do we get to this? How do we do that? How do we make water flow around a rock? What a thought. How do we fix that? When we make a rock, we're going to have to make a rock and then there will be streams around these rocks. How do we do that? Well, the water will just pile up behind the rock like jello. Maybe there's another way to do it. Every little thing in a universe has to be thought through. I like the jello thing myself, but nonetheless, you know, I probably would have been overruled. You know, it doesn't work like that. So, it's like the man who walked into Mr. Armstrong's office and said, if I was the apostle, we wouldn't do it like this. And he said, that's why you're not the apostle. Well, that's a pretty good answer. If I was God, I wouldn't do it like this. Well, we can at least talk about it. But no, probably there will be a general consensus. Oh, this is important for us to all understand. The United Church of God was formed as an organization in 1995 with the principle of consensus. Consensus. We agree mostly, most of us, way, way, way more than 51% of us agree on something, and then we should just do it. Otherwise, hold off. We'll talk about it some more.
moving to Texas was decided by 50.2% the first time and 50.4% the second time. We're going to move, and next year we're not going to move. Is that a consensus? See what was wrong with all that stuff? There was no consensus at all. It was a bunch of people arguing with each other. Well, the kingdom won't work like that. The family won't work like that. And this church won't work like that. So that changes. We're already changing it now. You mean you can quantify stuff like that? Yeah, betcha you can quantify stuff like this. Luke 1. We're almost done here. Luke 1. Not quite, but almost. Luke 1. We've read it, and we've seen it, and we've studied it, and it is attractive to us, and we understood that this isn't spoken from the pulpits other than here. But it's hard to comprehend what we're about to see. If we'll let ourselves think about it and pray about it and grasp more than we have. Luke 1, verse 32. Luke 1, verse 32. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end, never end. It will continue to grow orders of magnitude of encouragement and wisdom and creativity and experience. Why would God take a group of folks and make more members of the God family? Because it will never cease growing in giving. It will never cease consistently creating better and better and better and happier and greater forever. It's hard to comprehend that aspect of God's mind and his way of life, because we don't do it now. Don't know how. The result of becoming one spirit, the result of not trusting that somebody else is going to fix it all, and taking responsibility, for instance, next Sabbath, if somebody asks you a question, by God, answer it. If somebody walks into that room and you don't know the answer, pray about it before you say anything. Be ready to answer of the hope that lies in you. It's not necessarily Mr. Rowansby's job. Be ready. You think you know this? Yeah, because it's really information coming from God. The result of becoming one spirit is we're all there. For someone to walk into that room and say, you know, I never heard this before, but I just can't get past the Trinity thing. Okay, let's talk about it. There's a superior life, a superior culture, a superior thinking process, wisdom and life and creativity coming. It's already here now. You are experiencing it now, and you can pass it on. Caring, creating for all time together. Let's just go and see it, because the religions of the world, whether they call themselves Christians or not, would not agree with this. It must not be in the Bible. It's got to have been inserted. First John 3. That's where everybody else would go, is John 3. But First John 3. We're all in this together. The gifts of God are given to us individually. He's put us here individually as he wills. It's his church. The individual members are here by his calling, by his decisions, by his gift of the Spirit to each of us individually. And it has very little, if anything, to do with somebody else's responsibility. If anything, we're responsible to God for his family individually. Work out your own salvation Think about that. It's not the working, it's the own salvation part that's really important. Work with God on your own salvation. Let the other person work out theirs. 1 John 3, how in the world can this be in the Bible and the world not see it? 1 John 3, verse 1, behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called children of God. Therefore, the world doesn't know us because it didn't know Him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it hasn't yet been revealed what we'll be, but we know that when He's revealed, we'll be like Him, and we'll see Him as He is. People can't look on God, they'll die. So if we can see Him as He is, we'll have to be God. And everyone who has this hope in Him purifies himself just as He is pure. And even that's a gift.